Hey, welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Michael Spath, joined by former Michigan defensive lineman and regular Sunday guest, Will Heininger. We do not have Justin with us today. He's out of town. He gets the weekend off, which is a bummer because we've got lots to talk about in terms of college football and how it relates to Michigan. Will, thanks for joining us. Happy New Year. And man, it's 2021 finally, right?
No doubt. Mike, happy new year. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad that you confirmed it's 2021. I saw on my girlfriend's mirror over the break a list of things that she would like to have accomplished this year, different portions of the year. But instead of 2021, each of them said, you know, March 2020, September 2020. And I had a brief freak out that we were going to have to relive that year all over again. So glad it's 2021. Hope that means better things for everyone, including Michigan.
Yeah, that would be big. You know, certainly the basketball team. We're recording this podcast on Sunday morning. They play tonight against Northwestern. Michigan at this point is undefeated. Had a great win on New Year's Eve against Maryland. Talk about that in just a little bit. But so things are looking good for Michigan basketball. They also have the number one recruiting class in the 2021 class. Michigan football, well, I mean, that depends. I mean, we're going to get into the Jim Harbaugh contract situation. But Will, you know, one of the things that impacts Michigan football is what their opponents do, what their rivals do. And on New Year's Day, we saw Ohio State go out there and thump Clemson and beat Clemson as bad as Clemson has beaten, has been beat in probably the last 5 to 7 years since this rise of the Tigers under Dabo Swinney. Justin Fields threw for 6 touchdowns. They made Trevor Lawrence look mortal. An absolutely amazing game by Ohio State. What were your thoughts? What were your impressions? And what were your fears when you were watching that game?
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot to unpack there. I actually, believe it or not, I wasn't that surprised at the outcome. I don't know if that's because I thought more highly of Ohio State, or I bought more into, or I worried more about for Clemson, the loss of their normal play caller, not being there because of COVID protocols, and how much of a big deal that is if the person who, you know, decides what play you run regularly week in and week out, and for them, you know, 12 or 13 weeks isn't there. I didn't think that they would get blown out. But for instance, like when Clemson blew out Alabama in the national championship a couple of years back, I think it was Trevor Lawrence's freshman year, that I was shocked by. I'd never seen anything like it. And for whatever reason, as impressive as Ohio State was, I wasn't that surprised. My girlfriend's sister, unfortunately, is engaged to a Buckeye, and he was saying before the game that he liked the Clemson side of the line. And I just said to him, you know, I hate saying this, but I would take Ohio State straight up. I just think they're going to win. Mm-hmm. So they did their thing. They looked really good. We'll talk more about the national championship, but we can talk about where Michigan has to get to be on that level playing field. And then in the other one, you know, Alabama did what Alabama does, and they sort of suffocated Notre Dame to death. And it never really seemed like Notre Dame had a chance to be in it, but I'm not so sure that's going to be the case, you know, with the national championship next week. So what'd you think, Mike?
Yeah, I was really impressed by Justin Fields. I mean, he took a pretty nasty hit in the second quarter and came out of the game for a play or two and then came back in and threw a touchdown. And, you know, I know that he said that they shot him up, which, you know,
they had to.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like a lot of people are like, oh my God, like they're shooting a player. I mean, it's pretty common. It's a numbing agent. It's not, you know, it's not cloak and dagger. It's pretty widely accepted among college athletes and college coaches that that's what can happen. But I mean, he went out there in the second half and was just balling. I mean, I'm like a lot of people. I think, you know, what he showed was so impressive. I don't think he overtakes Trevor Lawrence for the number one pick in the NFL draft, just because Trevor Lawrence has been this good for 3 years and is probably the most pro-ready quarterback that, you know, we've seen come out of football since Andrew Luck back in whatever that was, 2011. No, I was blown away. I mean, the Alabama game was completely expected. You know, I didn't want Notre Dame to be there. I didn't think Notre Dame deserved to be the fourth team. At the same time, like, people that are arguing, like, I want an expanded playoff. I would love to see a group of five get an automatic bid, but I don't think that like Cincinnati deserved to get there over Notre Dame. I think either one of the teams would have gotten killed, and you know, they end up losing their game to Georgia with some poor clock management from Luke Fickell at the end of the contest. So, you know, I think it was kind of like one of those things where there were three really good teams in college football this year. Oklahoma probably is the fourth best, but didn't deserve to be there from losing a couple of games.
Yeah.
And so what we saw play out was there really was only two great teams in college football this year. And it'll be fun. Like I'll say this, when I was watching, it was really early in the game, Will, Clemson went up, I think they went up 7-0, Ohio State scored and Clemson came right down the field and scored again. And I thought, you know what, this is just going to be the way it is today. And Clemson's going to, you know, probably run right over Ohio State. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, if I have to watch Alabama and Clemson play in the national championship game again, I might just not watch because I'm not interested in that anymore. Like I'm done. They need to find some way to create greater parity in college football. But then we got Ohio State, and so now I'm going to watch the game. But it comes back to the same point, is parity is – like, they've got to do something because I don't think it is good for college football. I don't know about you, Will, that it's the same three or four teams. It's really – it's Alabama, it's Ohio State, it's Clemson. You know, you throw in the odd LSU here and there that has a remarkable season.
LSU, Oklahoma, you know, somebody gets in. But
it's three teams. It's three teams that have a chance. Notre Dame has been there a couple of times now and has gotten destroyed every time that they've been there. So they don't really have a chance. You know, Georgia, LSU, like those are the anomalies, right? Like they get there one time, but they haven't been able to sustain it. So this isn't, to me, this isn't good for college football that you go into the year knowing two or three teams can win it and that's it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And, you know, per our discussion a couple weeks back, it would be awesome to see an expanded playoff. Saw a couple articles about how they blew it this year to not, you know, use this year as a chance to expand it. And on paper, I agree with that. But, you know, in context, you know, all the more flying and traveling and everything it would take, I understand also the other side of not doing it. But man, it would be fun to see because I agree, you know, a team like Cincinnati, probably not going to win the whole thing, but did they show enough to where they can probably win a game or even two games? You know, one of those really good Boise teams, they could, you know, create some interest in the playoff, right? They make it another round if there's an 18 playoff, or maybe they make it two rounds. But the way it's set up right now, yeah, you basically, you can predict, you know, half or more of the playoff field, and it's not that hard. What will be interesting to see is just, you know, how the tides of college football change. Because I was just thinking back, you know, less than a decade ago, around that 2012, 2013 time when Clemson hadn't quite become Clemson and they were watching Jameis and Florida State just run away with everything, including, you know, beating all the top teams that you need to get there. And they had to be thinking, you know, we're never going to quite be where they are, or how do we get there? And they were only a couple years away from it. So as big as the gap looks right now between where we are and where the team from Columbus is, and it's huge. It's also not impossible to close, and look forward to that being part of this coming decade.
Well, let me ask a question about that though, because you're right. Like there is a cycle to these things, or seems to be a cycle to these things. But it's never – like, if you look at it, you had USC, the rise of USC in the early 2000s became the powerhouse, right? Yep. Matt Leinart and Reggie
Bush. Kind of took it from Miami. Carroll.
Yeah, took it from Miami. Then USC kind of handed it off maybe to Texas.
Yep.
And then Texas handed off to – I mean, LSU was in the mix there a little bit.
Florida Texas was – that, off that to was Florida. A urban – it sort of went from Texas to the urban Florida years.
To Florida, to then, you know, Alabama, Alabama to Clemson. Alabama's been in that mix still. Ohio
State. Yeah, Bama, Florida State snuck in there. But then you've had, you know, essentially the last 7 or 8 years been pretty much Clemson, Bama, Ohio State.
But here's my question about that, Will, is what we're talking about is we're talking about like maybe one team fades away. USC faded away and Texas came in. Texas faded away and Florida came in. But it wasn't like Texas faded away and 15 teams now had a chance. It was one team that had a chance and was dominant again. So it's like we're going from dynasty to dynasty to dynasty to dynasty. And again, right. I don't think that's good for college football is so say somehow Clemson, like Trevor Lawrence, you know, is now gone off the NFL and there's a little bit of chink in the armor and sure. someone can take the mantle from Clemson, but we're not talking about six or seven teams, like all getting that talent and using it to their advantage. We're talking about like, maybe it's Georgia or maybe it's Florida. So I still think that like college football has a problem if all we're discussing is one team stepping up instead of having, you know, again, after the national championship game next Monday, there's going to be all the top 25 polls that come out predicting like 2021 season. And sure. the same three teams are going to be at the top and everybody's going to say, you can pick the college football playoffs right now.
Yeah. Even though two of the top quarterbacks will be gone for sure. but yeah, you're right. I mean, that's kind of where we stand. And as you were explaining it, Mike, I was thinking about the why, and really the why, a lot of it comes down to the format, right? Of who's allowed to quote unquote rise up. Right. So even if say there were 5 to 8 teams that came along and were sort of available to take that mantle, right now there's only 4 spots. Mm-hmm. And we know how much the committee and people who decide college football pairings, you know, they sort of tend to be conservative or in the sense of teams who have been there and giving benefit of the doubt to some of the bigger names. You know, would they put another of these teams in? And then even if they did, they don't have the space to put in as it stands right now. They don't have a space to put in multiple of them. And so you kind of have to have the format change to even have a chance at some more parity, because you think about basketball,
yeah.
right? And if instead of 64 or 68, instead of that, they had, you know, 16 or 8 or 4, God forbid, they would never, you know, yeah. they would take a 2-8 Kentucky team, right? Like,
yeah.
not realistically, but we need more space in it. So I would love to see it expanded. I think 8, you know, 8 sounds interesting to me. I don't know if it's the perfect number, but it sounds a lot more interesting than 4. And then, you know, I'd love to get a place where we could get a couple weeks worth of it. So maybe even
yeah.
16, and you get to include a couple of those long shot teams. I think it'd be a lot more fun. You might see a team like Alabama get upset early on when they're not, who knows, as focused. But I agree. Expanding the playoff would be nice. And also just some parity in college football.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Will, to that argument and the basketball argument is, if you are a talented college basketball recruit, sure, a lot of these guys end up going to Duke, and a lot of these guys go to North Carolina, and a lot of these guys go to Kansas and go to Kentucky and all, you know, all the, that. But
then you get your Ja Morant.
Right. Well, there are 64 spots available. There's actually like 68 spots available. And so you don't have to go to one of the top 5 teams in college basketball to make it to the playoffs and make it to the tournament and have a chance. Right. And so that's one of the reasons for parity or for expanding the playoffs too, is right now, if I want to get to the college football playoff and play for a national championship, I pretty much have to go to Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, or Oklahoma. That's all. Yep. because there's only 4 spots available. If you make it 8 spots available, then suddenly a 5-star recruit in Florida says, yeah, I still want to go to Florida. Or I still want to go to Alabama. I still want to go to Clemson. I still want to go to Ohio State. But you know what? I can go to North Carolina. I can go yeah. to Penn State. I can go because there's more spots available. And there's still a really good chance that I'm going to get an opportunity to play for the national championship or get a play in the playoffs. And so right now it's like, yeah, you're stuck with, until you expand the playoffs, you're not telling any recruits out there that there's any place else to go besides these 3 schools.
Agreed. And there's no room for a, you know, Steph Curry at Davidson, or like I said, you know, Ja Morant at Murray State, or even in football's case, you know, a Coastal Carolina or a Liberty or something like that, because those two teams, as weird of a year as it was, if you took the names off and just put them on the field with a lot of the Power 5 teams, they're beating them this year. Now, do they have a chance the whole thing in the playoff? Almost absolutely not. But do they have a better chance at beating one of the teams in the playoff than most of the rest of the country? In an odd way, this year they did. So yeah, I would love to see, I'd love to see more of those teams get in. And you make a great point, Mike, about, you know, the lifeblood of it, the recruiting and where the players are actually going. And there's no room, like we said, for a star player to go to a smaller school if their goal is to be involved in the college football playoff.
Right. And beyond that too, the other reason for, I mean, is, as I think you said it earlier, Will, was just like, look, is Alabama still going to ultimately be in the championship game? Is Ohio State ultimately going to be in the championship game? Probably, if they're the two best teams. But every time you have to play another football game, I mean, we just saw Ohio State play Northwestern in the Big Ten championship last weekend. Yep. And they didn't look like the team that showed up to play Clemson didn't show up to play Northwestern.
Thank you.
And if that team, so say Ohio State, it's an 8-team playoff, they got to win three games to get there, and their first round game is against Cincinnati, you know, they could always have a letdown, or they could have a letdown in the second game against somebody. And there's going to be an upset here and there, because that's the nature of playoffs, is there tends to be an upset. Plus, one more thing about it, at least in that opening quarterfinal games where you have four, you know, you have four games, you have two games on one day and two games the other, at least there's a chance when we get to like the 3-6 matchup and the 4-5 matchup that we might see some good football, because all we're seeing are blowouts right now.
Exactly. And just how fun would it be if one of those teams does win a game, you know, the buildup for the entire following week. And, you know, that's what, call it what it is, that's what the sport industry needs and cares about, is the eyeballs and the ratings. And if you have the, you know, oh, Cincinnati knocked off Ohio State, you know, can they beat Bama? Can they beat Clemson? You know, we know the answer is probably not, but hey, they just did it. You know, Florida Gulf Coast a couple of years ago. It would be, it would add some intrigue. It would add some interest, because I think you and I fall, you know, pretty far on the end of the spectrum of college football fans and how much we care. And even I've found myself during the playoff era, kind of, at least during the semifinals, like, it's just kind of like, eh, like, you know what's going to happen. Like, Bama had Washington one year. Pretty predictable. Every year seems fairly predictable until the finals. So would love to see it expanded, would love to see some other teams in there, and would love Michigan to obviously be there and maybe start by getting to the Big Ten championship.
Well, let's talk, let's get into a little bit of where Michigan is compared to Ohio State. Do they have a chance to catch up? But I want to give a shout out to so many of our great sponsors, including Kaepnick Insurance Group, which I left the sports media business, if you can tell, because I'm still doing a sports podcast, but I left the sports media business for a great opportunity for my family. And that opportunity is with Kaepnick Insurance Group. And, you know, what I really like about working with Kaepnick, and I had some friends over last week that said, you know, can you make a transition from sports media to selling insurance? And I said, yeah, because it's all about people. And I've always been a people person. I've always liked the sales aspect wherever I was. And, you know, here's the thing, is that it's taking care of people. It's looking out for their best interest. Sometimes they don't know. In fact, I was asking my friends that were over, I said, you know, what kind of insurance do you have? And they both told me, and I'm not going to tell you the company, but they both told me, and I said, what is your, you know, can you tell me anything about your car insurance or your home insurance? The boyfriend had just bought a new home in Ferndale about 3 months ago. And I'm like, can you tell me anything about it? And he's like, I know it's cheap. And I said, well, great. It's great. It's awesome. Everybody wants cheap insurance. You know, everybody thinks about it because it's a necessary evil. I just want the cheapest insurance. But the problem is that a little bit like when you know, if you get married and you have a family, is your will and testament is like, you want to take care of that generation if anything should happen. You hope nothing ever happens, but if that one time it does happen, you want to make sure you're taken care of. And the question you're going to ask yourself is like, did I take care of myself? Or did I get the cheapest insurance? And so many times I think people get the cheapest insurance and they're not aware of like taking care of themselves. And that's where someone like me and my colleagues come in, is that we understand this better than anybody. We're not going to sell you anything more than you want. That's for damn sure. In fact, most of the times we end up beating people's current prices, but what we do is make sure that you're covered, or your house is covered in case there's like a snowstorm like we have outside and your roof caves in. You've got all this water damage inside your house, or you're driving down the road and you get in a car accident and you find out like, oh crap, I have a really high deductible, but I have great, I have really cheap insurance, but now I've got to pay $1,000 to get my car fixed. And now I've also, you know, hurt somebody in the process. And so what am I liability? So it's one of the things that we look out for at Kaepnick Insurance Group. You can learn much more by going to Kaepnick.com. You can email me, mspath, that's mspath at kaepnick.com. And our friends at Frankenmuth Insurance, great people up in Frankenmuth too. So, and it's an awesome opportunity. I'm looking forward to it in 2021. So Will, yeah, I mean, watching that Ohio State game, I saw a lot of panic from Michigan fans that it's over. It's over. Like, let's readjust expectations altogether here. You know, if Clemson can't beat Ohio State, if Clemson looks as bad against the Buckeyes as Michigan does, how does Michigan even have a chance to play and beat the Buckeyes anytime in the future? So what do you say when you watch a game like that and you realize, like, wow, this is a really good football team. And, you know, Michigan hasn't been a really good football team the last 2 years and has been losing pretty badly to Ohio State.
Yeah. I mean, I think you call it what it is. I think, you know, it didn't take yesterday to show that, you know, they've opened up a gap for where they are and where really most of the country is, aside from the other two or three professional teams that we've talked about. But again, it's not all doom and gloom, and we love to be reactionary as fans, but you know, you talk about 10 days ago or whatever it was, they played Northwestern and they looked like a very different team. They looked like a beatable football team. That is one of the beautiful things about the sport, is you just don't get the same team every week. It's really a sport of parity and, you know, survival of the fittest in a lot of ways. And so, you know, Ohio State, they look remarkable. We have a long, we have a long way to go to catch them, but it's not as if it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to lose the next 20 years. I mean, you have to go out in the field, you have to play the games. And let's be honest, we've had some teams with a lot less talent go out against some Ohio State teams that were ranked just as highly and either keep it close or, you know, took an L by 14 points or whatever it was. So what's the point? You're not supposed to play these games anymore because you have a really good rival, or maybe you have a benchmark to strive for and something to look at every day. And maybe because they've reached the heights that they have, you know, hopefully, who knows, maybe Michigan isn't quite as important. Maybe, you know, winning that national championship or getting over that hump, you know, beating Bama becomes more of a priority. But for us, we have to focus on improving what we do on the field. I don't think you look at these other teams across the country who have come up themselves and they've been hyper-focused on, we got to beat Ohio State, we got to beat Ohio State. No, we have to improve what Michigan is doing. We have to improve what our own program is doing, self-scout, look at our weaknesses, and move on from there and go forward from there. If you're hell-bent on only catching them, you're not going to be able to, you're going to miss things along the way, and you're not going to build in a way that's sustainable. But I do think there are areas that stand out as glaring, mainly at the quarterback position, in the skill positions. And then this year, along the lines a little bit more as well, although we lost a lot of talent to the NFL along the lines. But, you know, Mike, we've got a long way to go. I don't think it's an impossible gap to close. I think you look at the Ohio State team that played Northwestern, you look at the Ohio State team that played yesterday, and they don't look like the same one. And you would certainly take one over the other if they were to match up against each other. So that's just my take on it. It seems like a reason to freak out. You know, people are saying, oh, thank God they canceled the game. I think it's, you know, right. It's proof that Ohio State was really good this year. They are really good. If Fields' ribs are fine, I actually like them to beat Bama. But, yeah, I don't think it's anything more than, hey, there's a dominant team in our conference that is our arch rival. That's sort of been the case for, I don't know, 50, 70 years, something like this. And we go back and forth with them, and it's our turn to, you know, up our game and get back to it.
Yeah. Well, as you said, I mean, look, you know, Clemson did take it away from Florida State. I mean, it does happen. What has to take place for it to happen? Well, you know, you've got to have the right coach. You've got to have the right mentality. You've got to have the right culture. You've got to be able to develop players, all things that unfortunately have not been trending in Michigan's direction the last couple of years. You know, whether or not Harbaugh can get it back or it takes somebody else coming in, at the very least, Will, and I'm tired of talking about it, and I know Michigan fans are tired of talking about it, but I'm tired of having to, like, look at the quarterback on the other side of the field and just be like, when is Michigan going to have that guy? And we discuss it every year, like whether it's going to be Joe Milton, and it wasn't Joe Milton. And, you know, hope the kid ends up, you know, being able to rebound and find his confidence, whether that's at Michigan or somewhere else, because he's got immense talent. But it wasn't Joe Milton. And is it Cade McNamara? I mean, the kid's got some intangibles, you know, but is he going to go out there? And I don't know who the next kid is at Ohio State, but there's going to be somebody. Is he going to be able to go toe to toe with him? I don't know. Is it JJ McCarthy coming in? I don't know. But until they get one of these kids, because look, what you saw in that game on Friday night, is you saw the best quarterback in college football, Trevor Lawrence, and you saw a guy go out there and ball out and be better than him at quarterback in Justin Fields. And it's not that simple, because you also had, you know, great defensive line play from Ohio State. You had outstanding running game from Trey Sermon, the grad transfer from Oklahoma. There were a lot of other pieces, but ultimately it came down to you had two outstanding quarterbacks, and one of them just went all out and got the job done. And Michigan hasn't had that for a decade now. And you know, back since probably Denard, and one game of Devin Gardner, where he almost beat Ohio State. And so, you know, things, I don't think it's impossible to beat Ohio State, but Michigan has made it harder on itself the last couple of years. And until Michigan gets the right culture, gets the right coach who can develop players, and gets the right quarterback, it ain't going to happen.
Yep. I'm right there with you. I think along the exact same lines of the quarterback position. And I think that thinking probably permeated Schembechler Hall to some extent, because, you know, we've tried to replicate having that type of elite playmaking quarterback. And to this point so far, none of them have been better than Jake Rudock, say, yeah, who's the opposite of that kind of quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're at a point as a program where, I don't know about you, I would take Jake Rudock's play in a heartbeat over what we've had right now. And that probably is not good enough to get us over the, or into the playoff, into the conference championship discussion. But it's better than we've had. It's sound, it's competent, it's confident. So I would like to have those things again in our quarterback, but then add in the athletic ability of a Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence, or, you know, even Shea Patterson for that matter. But to have really sound play would be a start. And that position, you've highlighted it, is probably the biggest difference between, at least right on the field, between us and other programs, up there with the skill position talent. And then I will say the lines again for this year, but we've done a pretty good job along the lines recruiting, and match up pretty well with some of those, the most powerful schools in the country. But when you look at wide receiver recruiting, you look at defensive back recruiting, and you look at quarterback, and development, as Justin would certainly say if he were here, mm-hmm. We've got an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I don't know. I wonder how much, you know, say 2021, the players, the coaches, everybody gets vaccinated, if our country can, you know, get its act together here, and 2021 is a normal season. I don't know that it's going to be completely normal. Will, I don't know about you, because I think spring practice is going to be impacted. I don't think all these players and coaches are going to be vaccinated until probably late spring, early summer. And so I do think there's going to be an impact on spring ball, but I think there's an opportunity for us with, you know, with this breakthrough medicine, for us to have like quasi-normal sports beginning sometime in summer and beyond. And, you know, if that's the case, like, I don't want to completely write off 2021 and be like, well, it's Ohio State and Michigan's going to finish in second place. But I do think, depending on how things break here with Jim Harbaugh and break with like recruiting and what coordinators, if Harbaugh comes back, what coordinators brings in, you know, it might not be the worst idea in the world for most Michigan fans to kind of say, hey, if they win 10 games this year, I'll count that as a success. Or if they, you know, beat Michigan State this year, I'll count that as a success. If they have a quarterback that does this, I'll count that as a success. Because I don't think it could happen, but I don't think the switch is going to be flipped on Ohio State, you know, anytime soon, especially not in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think realistic expectations. Yeah, you know, you mentioned during your Kaepernick Reed promotion, yeah, how in the sales part of it, and realistic expectations are a huge part of that sales process. And I think, you know, for U of M fans, obviously to go out and say, oh, we're going to win the national championships, a little far flung. But I don't think there were many LSU fans 2 years ago who were sure that they were going to come out and win the national title after seeing what they'd had the year before. Now, did they bring in a new coordinator? Yep. Was he dynamic? Yep. Did he get the most out of the talent? Yep. Did he turn an average kid from Ohio into a number one pick? Yep. So, you know, there's hope. But right now, as you pointed out, we don't really have those reasons for hope. We don't have a lot of change going on. And so even when you do have a new coach, right, there's at least an abundance of hope. There's a lot of possibilities. And I think Michigan fans are, struggling with the status quo. Like you said, a lot of it comes down to where we're at with coaching next season. If Harbaugh goes to the NFL or if he stays, and then obviously everything that transpires from that decision. So where it stands right now, you know, I would love to win 10 games next year. But just more than that, I would love to go out and be a competent, competitive, aggressive football team that plays together and looks something like the Michigan that we know and love, and not something that we're embarrassed to watch and indifferent about, or at least can maybe not indifferent because we care too much, but it's too hard to watch. So we'll see where we're at for 2021. I think the year will be almost back to normal, much more so than this year in terms of college sports. Mm-hmm. But in terms of expecting us to automatically jump to number one, unfortunately, it's not video games, and it'll take a little bit longer than that probably.
Yeah, speaking of video games, my nephew, who is 7 years old here, has got his first video game system for Christmas and has discovered old school Mortal Kombat, which, which, you know, is kind of funny because, like, they've been shielding him. My niece or my sister-in-law, brother-in-law, been shielding him from, you know, like violent TV and like movies and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, like, they're ripping out people's like guts with old school Mortal Kombat.
Right, but so, you know, the parents grew up with that, so therefore it's,
well, that's a thing. Yeah, my wife went over there the other day and she was like, oh my god, I like somehow like my hands just remembered the moves, and I was able to do like finishing moves and like take, you know, and I was able to like, yeah, like, you know, kick this guy in the groin, or I was able to like decapitate this guy, and I was like wow, that's a really proud aunt moment, isn't it? She's like, yeah. So old school, man, old school. Hey, speaking of, let's talk about the situation with Harbaugh and where you'd be at from a former player, and because you went through kind of a coaching, two of coaching changes, from Lloyd to Rich, and then Rich to Brady. So we'll get into that for a second. But Will, with your girlfriend, you want to impress her, you want to do something great for her. We're going to do this in a couple of weeks. We're celebrating our anniversary, our third anniversary, in mid-January, and our friends at Weber's Hotel have a date night delivered room package, overnight accommodations for one night, starting at $150 for Sunday through Thursday and $175 for Friday and Saturday night stays, with a $100 credit towards dinner from Weber's restaurant included in the room rate. Yeah. So you pay $175, but you get a $100 food credit, which is pretty remarkable, pretty amazing. And again, that's a Friday, Saturday night, $175. Sunday through Thursday is $150. You can go to webbersannarbor.com for more information. So, you know, I don't know about you, but like this, you know, the no restaurants, the whole thing just got extended again for Michigan. And so like, you got to get out, you want to do something fun for maybe a date night. And so, you know, the one nice thing about a hotel, you stay at the hotel, you have the room to yourself, the whole thing. No, you can't go down to the restaurant, but you can have room service delivered to you. And at Weber's, they've got these beautiful balconies that overlook the pool and the atrium. Make sure you get a poolside room. You can sit out there with your significant other, enjoy your wine, enjoy your bourbon, enjoy your food, your appetizers, the whole thing. It makes you feel like you're getting at least a little bit of a special night out when you got all these other measures that we've got to, you know, we've got to be careful here still. So again, webbersannarbor.com for more information. All right. So Will, let me ask you, two different coaching scenarios that you went through. The first one, Lloyd retired. It was after the 2007 season, after he went out at the Capital One Bowl, but he had announced before that, he announced after the Ohio State game that he was retiring. And so it wasn't like all this it was rampant speculation on who the next coach would be, but it wasn't like this guy doesn't, you know, shouldn't be here anymore. Then 3 years later, after the 2010 season, a lot of people were frustrated with Rich Rodriguez. a lot of speculation. Dave Brandon had been the AD for a year at that point, that he was going to fire him. So let's talk about the second one, because I mean, this is similar to Harbaugh's, is I don't think anybody thinks at this point Michigan's going to fire him. But there's all this ambiguity about whether he's going to sign a contract extension. It's been reported by both The Athletic, Bruce Feldman and Nick Bumgarner, Chris Ballas from The Wolverine, Sam Webb from The Michigan Insider, that he is going to sign an extension. It's also been reported from John Bacon, from the Free Press, and not to toot my own horn, but from me, that the offer's on the table, but that he's waiting to see what happens with NFL after tomorrow's Black Monday, after the final game of the regular season. The NFL will fire their coaches, and Jim might be still coveting an NFL job. And so all this speculation, all this uncertainty, you know, what was it like for you in 2010? And what is this program going through right now with all this, as I said, ambiguity?
Yeah, well, to your point, there's enough, the names you just named, the sources that you named, have anybody who follows this sport in this program, those knows that those are the names that are usually in the know and that usually get the tips first and have the scoops. And when you have those types of sources that are differing on something or have heard different things, that to me is a reason to prick your ears up, because I wouldn't be surprised if from the horse's mouth itself, those both have been true at different times, right? In the last couple weeks, where he's, yep, I'm re-signing, I'm staying at Michigan, or maybe where his mind and heart have drifted somewhere else to the NFL. So there's enough smoke there just on that point, I wanted to say to pay attention, of course. As far as a player's position, it does make a difference, I think, whether it's going to be, you know, somebody being fired or retiring. But for them right now, there's just the uncertainty, right? The ambiguity of, is this guy going to be our coach next year? And that's difficult regardless. So in 2007, when Coach Carr retired, you know, we knew we had a new coach coming in. We were sort of anticipating it, and Coach Rod, you know, was around, and they were checking out, you know, different things in the facility. So we got to see him and know him a little bit. Anyway, as far as when he got fired, and when Coach Hoke came in, there was much more sort of excitement about it. I think when Lloyd retired, we were unsure. I mean, we wanted him to stay. And then we sort of adapted and obviously worked hard for the new staff. But there wasn't like, we need change feeling. It was, we miss our old coach. The second time around, I mean, there literally was a party in Schembechler Hall. I mean, low key party, but we just had the locker room redone and they had these cool neon lights in there. And the guys turned off the main lights and just had the neon lights when we got the news we were going to have a new coach, because at that point, Coach Rodriguez had rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, had done a lot of people wrong, and we were ready for a new beginning. So for the players right now, I feel for them the most, because they go through the most. They just want a chance to go out and play good football and be taught good football. And so for them, I actually, Mike, I think they're in the hardest situation right now, because they don't know their future. They don't know the person or the people who are going to be sort of in charge of it, at least in their college football playing future. And so they have to go back to some of the lessons that all of us do in moments like when there's uncertainty, of controlling what they can control, right? What are the things that they're going to be doing in 4, 6, 8 months, regardless of who's their coach, right? And then training for those things, preparing themselves for those things, aligning the kinds of supports that will allow them to succeed this coming semester, plus in spring, summer, and then be ready to play. So it's tough. I'm not going to lie. It's tough not knowing, you know, who your coach is going to be. And with all the smoke going on right now, and you know how many people are in their ears and on social media, it's hard to know what they know and what they don't know. So we'll see how things shake out in the next, you know, 7 to 10 days. Obviously you said tomorrow's Black Monday, but I'm curious what you think, you know, just the next couple weeks hold, not asking you to predict the future, but sort of, you know, as a Michigan fan, how to digest the next couple weeks, how to approach it, how to stay sane.
Well, sanity is out the window, man. It's been out the window for a decade. No, I think here's the thing, is that everything I've been told is that they want to, the Harbaughs want to wait until Black Monday to see if there's a good opportunity in the NFL, whether that's with the Chargers. Some people have talked about the Detroit Lions who fired
Jacksonville, right? At this point,
Jacksonville, the
Jets. That's what I hear.
Yeah, the New York Jets are an interesting scenario going to New York. You know, I don't know how Jim would mesh with the New York media. I don't think it'd be good.
No, I think he wants Trevor Lawrence as well. I shouldn't say that. I think any coach who's looking at jumping to the NFL would look at that position. Anyway, sorry about that.
Absolutely. No, that's okay. So I've been told that, you know, not that he's, I don't know the right terminology, not that Michigan is, you know, the ugly redheaded stepchild, but he wants to consider his options, and his options are also in the NFL. Because after 6 years at Michigan, I mean, things might have just run its course, and maybe there's a better opportunity for him and his family somewhere else. And if that's the case, so be it. Jim, go do your thing. I'm not going to hold it against you. I'm not going to call you names for leaving Michigan. You know, but you've just got to practice some patience here. You know, if he doesn't sign his contract extension tomorrow, and if he doesn't sign it on Tuesday, then I would probably be thinking like this is going to take a little while, because he is exploring NFL opportunities. He is talking to general managers. He is having his agents, you know, set up or meetings with other different people. And then, you know, depending on how that goes, if he does take an NFL job, well, then the entire coaching search, which you just talked about, starts in earnest. And who are the hot names and who are the candidates you can interview that, as I've said repeatedly, you know, with the right opportunity, with the right resources, could be the next star in the college ranks. You know, or Jim comes back, and then you look at assistant coaches. Don Brown is out. Who's is going to be his new defensive coordinator? And is there going to be a new offensive coordinator? Lots of rumblings that they're not really happy with Josh Gattis, or think that, you know, he would just benefit from having a more seasoned veteran play caller come in and help him establish the offense. So it's hard because, like, rampant speculation and talking about the most recent rumors and the whole thing certainly does well for podcast numbers. It does well for subscriptions, but it's also one of those things, Will, where you understand this now, that it's like a little bit of talking in a circle, because unless you have absolutely concrete information, and honestly, like, Jim is a pretty tight-lipped guy and Ward Manuel is a pretty tight-lipped guy. A lot of it is just kind of, I don't say guessing, but a lot of it is like, okay, inferring based off of reading the tea leaves, inferring based off of, you know, getting a little bit of scoop here and there and what you're hearing from people. And it's, I don't know, everybody can do with that what they want to. I have a couple of friends who text me all day, all the time about it. And like, I'm not as actively engaged in the conversation with them as they are, because for me, it's like, I'm just going to kind of sit back and wait a little bit. I'm trying to be a little more patient, and I'm going to go spend some more time with my son, or I'm going to go spend some time with my wife, or I'm going to make dinner, or I'm going to do something like that. Like, I can't live it 24/7, because living it 24/7, you're really, like, at that point, it reminds me of the NFL draft when they do mock drafts. I don't know how much you pay attention to them, but like, they start coming out even before now. Like, they've been coming out for the last couple of weeks. And like, if you literally live with every single mock draft that comes out, the guys from CBS, the guys from The Athletic, the guys from Pro Football Outsiders, the guy from Pro Football Network, the guys from NBC, the guys from Sports Illustrated, ESPN, if you live with every single mock draft, ooh, there's a new mock out. What are they saying? Who are the Lions going to get? I mean, you drive yourself crazy, because it's a different opinion every single day. And it's, to me, it's like, I care about the mock drafts probably like 3 days before the NFL draft. And even then, they're usually only like 50% right. So that's kind of the approach I'm taking with it a little bit, is not trying to get too wrapped up in what's Jim Harbaugh going to do, and waiting a little bit until the dust settles and see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like that is a more reasonable approach. And he's saying, being patient, spend some time with your family, time with the wife and kids. I'm thinking to myself, man, is this what my 40s are going to come to? What I have to look forward to in 8 or 9 years? Just chiding you a bit, but I
salt.
I
salt hear you, Mike. There.
No, are you kidding? It's said with admiration, genuinely, and also just thinking through the circular talk that is this industry in a lot of ways. And if we all knew the facts, then there'd be a lot less people listening to the speculation and a lot less shows about it. But not to turn host on you here, but I do have a question about the two teams remaining. And feel free to guide it wherever else you want to go. But I know that we were gonna get to the national championship, and I'm curious what you think of that matchup.
I thought you were gonna ask me who I'm rooting for, like the
evil. I decided not to ask because I'll give my take on it in a minute. It's a tough question.
I'll say this: I wasn't rooting for Ohio State in the game, but as I said earlier, if Clemson and Alabama were the national championship, I wouldn't have watched. And so now that it's Ohio State and Alabama, I'm at least intrigued enough to watch the game.
Yeah.
What do I think about the matchup? I mean, God, it's like Alabama has been pretty damn good all year long. And Devontae Smith, I got asked for a Heisman, not to like an official, but I got asked about the Heisman like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I had him like third on my list, I think it was. And I had quarterback Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones ahead of him. And someone's like, how do you not have Devontae Smith number one? I go, well, because I'm being realistic and wide receivers don't win this award. Well, he should win the award. He is freaking dominant. He is amazing. He's the best wide receiver that maybe, and we've seen some great ones come out of Alabama. And we've seen some great ones come out of Clemson and Ohio State and go on down the list. Like, he might be the best wide receiver that I have seen in college football in at least a decade. I don't know who you'd have to go back to say like that guy was as good as him. Like Jamar Chase, and Justin Jefferson from LSU last year were so good. This guy's better. Like, he's better than the Alabama Jerry Jeudy. He's better than the guy who's at with the Atlanta Falcons now. I mean,
Julio?
Yeah, he's really better than Julio Jones, dude.
No. See, I will admit, I need to watch more of Devontae Smith.
He's better in college than Julio Jones. I don't know how Julio Jones – I'm not saying he's going to be a better pro, because Julio Jones has been an amazing pro. But he's the best college wide receiver I've seen in 15, 20 years.
Wow. Well, you know, here's what I would say to that, because I won't nitpick talent. I have a lot of friends and you know, people who – former teammates who do that stuff for a living. And I would love to – ask a couple more of them just about Devontae Smith. Even before you said that, Mike, it was somebody that I felt like I needed to know more about. I've seen his highlights from this year. But I was going to say, you know, just of the receivers that have come out of Alabama.
Yeah, Amari Cooper. I forgot about Amari Cooper. He was damn good.
Yeah. I forgot about Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper. I forgot about Ruggs, who's just a rookie, obviously, but you got Julio, you got Calvin Ridley, who are two of the better receivers in the NFL. And a lot of people think Julio is the best. But then you got this Devontae Smith, and even the announcers yesterday talking about, you know, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. But he just consistently produces. And that's what, now, hopefully they're very different in terms of their mental makeup and their personality, but that's what people said about Antonio Brown was, you know, he is very fast, but he's not the fastest guy ever. He's certainly not the biggest guy ever. And he just kept producing. Now, the big difference, Mike, you know, and obviously, you know, this elephant in the room is college football in 2020 and the wide open and the spread. I mean, when Julio was there, they probably ran the ball. I don't know. It was still the Mark Ingram years, more or less. Right. We might have the best receiver in the country, and we're still not going to target him more than 5 or 6 times in a game because they just didn't throw the ball that much. And then this year with Sarkisian in charge and the success LSU had last year throwing the football, and I think Nick being more open to opening it up on offense. So you've got, you know, the Devontae Smith as the product there, but I would love to see what he does in the NFL, like where he projects, because he's kind of a tweener in terms of, you know, he's not as big as Julio. Yeah. He's not the small, quick guy either, but man, he certainly is impressive. And my actual comparison, or not the two that I would like to compare, because I think, and you probably disagree saying what you said, I think I would take Olave over Devontae Smith if I just had one receiver.
Wow.
I think I would.
My problem with that is Olave, I mean, I just don't think he's as physical as Devontae Smith. Like, look at them standing side by side, and Devontae Smith looks like a man child. I mean, he is built. And like, I think Olave is still, that's the one thing about some of these wide receivers that have come out of Ohio State, super fast. But I haven't seen these guys get like massively big yet. So I think Devontae Smith, it's a great matchup. When you're talking about it, I mean, Mac Jones has been has been outstanding for Alabama this year. Their offensive line, you know, the playmakers that they have defensively. To come back to your original question, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be I think it could be the best national championship game we've seen in since maybe that Clemson Alabama game a couple years ago that went down to the wire.
Deshaun Watson.
I'm going to look up the national championship finals, but like the ones that stand out to me is that Clemson Alabama game that was probably like 2016, 2017, right around then.
Yep.
You got the Texas USC game of like 2004.
Yeah. Vince Young. That was one of the best ones and de facto national title at that point. But yeah, certainly.
So, I mean, I think those are some, I'm hoping for that. I'm hoping that if I'm going to stay up till midnight and my son's going to wake up at 6:30 the next morning, that I am, you know, doing so for a great football game. But we'll see. I'm really looking forward to it. And who am I picking? I think I'm going to go with Alabama, like, because Ohio State has, I don't say they've been Jekyll and Hyde because they've been pretty consistent, but because they've only had one game, like we just saw them have, versus Alabama's had like nine games, like we've seen them have. I'm going to go with Alabama just because they look a little more consistent.
Yeah, I can understand that. And, you know, it's going to be a hell of a game. I'm trying to find the date of it right now. There we go. 1/11. And the reason I wanted to find the date, so that's 8 days from today, 9 days from yesterday. The reason is, Mike, if you told me Justin Fields was 100%, I think I would take Ohio State.
Okay.
And I don't want to do that. It's just where my gut is. I think they're a little bit more sound in a number of areas that add up to maybe 6 or 7 points. And then I just think their skill position talent, you know, can hang more or less with Bama. Now I do worry a little bit at corner. Cause of, as you said, Devontae Smith, but it's not a team that if they get down 2 touchdowns, they're done for. With Justin Fields, I can't tell you how painful it is to have a rib injury. And that is if you're not a throwing person, if you're not a quarterback, or in my case, back in the day playing baseball. But if you have to rotate and throw, and you're exposing the part of your body that's sore, and you have 300 pound dudes with their helmets coming at your ribs, that matters. And so what he did in the second half against Clemson was remarkable to me, but it was also, as you mentioned, a product of adrenaline plus the cortisone shot that we'll get in those situations. So I don't know if he's going to be, I don't know if he will be without effect from that shot to the ribs, even in 8 days. And if that affects him, I could see it get running away from Ohio State. But honestly, if he's healthy, I think I might take them straight up. I think they might just pull it out. As far as who I'm rooting for, man, it's hard to say I'm rooting for Alabama. It's harder to say I'm rooting for Ohio State. I think I just want to watch good football and see how former NFL players match up. But I've believed for a long time, my whole life, my grandpa would say, you know, I can't tell you who I'm rooting for until the game starts. Cause once it starts, you sort of find yourself rooting for somebody. And it might be different than who you decided first. So I want to see good football. Thing? I'd rather see Michigan in it. But yeah, I'll say I think the Big Ten will win one.
Okay. And that'd be good for the Big Ten. It would be. You know what? It just to take the SEC off its high horse a little bit, it'd be good for the Big
Ten. Seriously. And the South.
what you just said is so incredibly true. And it's weird how human nature works where you go into a game and, you know, if you know my history, I have 4 cousins went to Clemson. My uncle was a professor at Clemson and then associate dean there. It's my dad's sister's family. We're very close to them. We used to go down to Clemson for spring break from the time that I was like 6 years old to probably like 13 years old. I have been to, other than Michigan and Northwestern games, which has something to do with a childhood friend whose dad played football at Northwestern. I've been to more Clemson football games than, like, that's my third most. I've been to, I think, maybe 4 or 5 Clemson football games. I've seen them play South Carolina.
I knew a lot about that. I didn't know you were that deep. So go on.
Oh, hardcore, man. Like, I have tons of Clemson gear from well beyond 2000, you know, well before 2013 or whatever like that. right? And so I've been a huge Clemson fan and I've enjoyed this. And so when we started watching the game on Friday, my wife's like, who are, you know, oh, Clemson's losing. She's like, are you bummed right now? And I'm like, nah, I'm okay with it. And she's like, are you rooting for Ohio State? I'm like, no, I'm not rooting for Ohio State. And she's like, but you're not rooting for Clemson. And I'm like, no, I'm not really rooting for Clemson either. And it wasn't until they started playing the game that I kind of felt what you just said, that you sort of have like a rooting interest, even if you don't want to admit to yourself that you have a rooting interest.
Absolutely.
And so I'll let you know on Tuesday morning or maybe Wednesday or Monday night as it's going on. Like, do I find myself actually not cheering? I never once celebrated a Justin Fields touchdown or anything like that. Like, I never got excited. I was not an Ohio State fan, but I was like smugly satisfied with Clemson losing. And so I think that'll be the same thing that happens on Monday night, is if Ohio State wins, I'll be smugly satisfied with Alabama losing, more so than I would be if Ohio State lost, if that makes any sense.
It makes all the sense in the world. And yeah, I think I'm coming from the same place. I don't have nearly the Clemson roots at all that you do. I dated a girl from Clemson for a little while, and I don't feel two ways about it, except that when they lose, there is a little bit of that smug smile. And, mm-hmm. and on that note, I want to share one anecdote, Mike, from my grandfather, my late grandfather, who made the rule, or told me the rule, about rooting and rooting interest. And you decide when the game's on. He's a Central Ohio person, spent all of his life there except for when he was in World War II. And obviously, you know, grew up with Ohio State, everything. And he became wise, you know, in his older years. He told me a story. He'd worked for the railroad, Mike, and he would go into work, all these Buckeye fans. And so he just learned just to rile people up with that smug smile, right? He learned to whistle to victors, and he would whistle to victors on the stairs and on his way up to work in Central Ohio on the railroad. And it's that type of smug satisfaction that I think that we'll get either way, because one of these teams is going to lose on Monday night.
Yeah, that's a great – I love that, man. I love the stories that get passed down from generation to generation, and especially grandfathers and grandmothers to that, you know, to their grandchildren. And we were just looking through some pictures that came across some. We were cleaning out our basement and saw some pictures of my grandparents, who three out of the four are gone. And I was just like, oh, man, like, remember when this happened, when that happened. And so what a cool story, Will. Thanks very much for sharing that. Well, yeah. We're going to end, because Will and I talked about having a short, like 30-minute podcast, and I think we're over an hour. I haven't exactly kept track, but I think we're over an hour here. Michigan women's basketball today at 5 p.m. They take on Northwestern in a ranked game. The women's team has been awesome so far this year, so you can check that out on ESPN2. The men's team also plays tonight against Northwestern. That game is 7:30 p.m. on Big Ten Network. If you're listening to this podcast on Monday, we'll have another podcast. Justin will come back. We'll talk about where this Michigan men's and women's basketball teams are. And, you know, Monday, Tuesday, whenever do we do the next podcast, maybe there'll be a little bit news on Jim Harbaugh. Maybe there'll be some conversations with the Chargers or the Jets that we can confirm. Or maybe he'll have signed his contract extension with Michigan. We'll have a much better feel for that in the coming days. Will, thank you so much for taking the time for on this Sunday morning. Go out there and enjoy. I mean, I got out there and I shoveled the snow this morning, and it's a beautiful snowfall. It's one of those ones that's heavy, it's wet, it's sticking to everything, and so it's very pretty. I'm going to try to get outside and go for a run, which kind of sounds a little crazy in the snow, but it's like, you know, it's just,
you know what? It's magical, the best
mornings. Yeah.
I just got Yak Tracks.
Oh, I heard Christmas. About these.
If you run in the snow, they have made me run in the snow. They are amazing. You need to look them up. They're called Yak Tracks. They go non-paid sponsor. They just go over your running shoes and they make it so you don't slip in whatever ice, snow. And I think I'm going to put them on and maybe get out to the ARB today.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Well, have a great time, Justin. Justin, thanks. Have a great time, Will. We'll say goodbye, and we'll rub this in Justin's face a little bit that he wasn't here today. So,
yeah. Well, thank you, Mike. Go Blue, and look forward to listening the rest of the week.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Will.